Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and we're here every night until 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast, and all of the fun that can be had, all of the fun that we can cram into those 3 hours, we do definitely try to do that. We like to say there's radio, and then there's the Phil Henry Show.
And what does that mean?
Well, we don't know, but it's good, you know.
Well, you can't say it's good until you, you know.
I can say anything I want to say. I can say anything I want to say. As long as I don't slander anybody, as long as I don't endanger public health and safety, I can say any damn thing I want. I can say that there are little men that live in your house.
Shut up, will you?
Why does he do that?
Because Bud's got this thing about little men that live in his house.
You don't think they're really little men. No, I don't, but it was a show that I saw.
He saw that Twilight Zone where there were little tiny people.
What?
The Twilight Zone where there's little tiny people living on a guy, or I mean, they land on a planet of tiny people.
They landed on a planet of little people, and this one guy was two astronauts, and one of them was a real ass, and he had a megalomaniacal kind of mindset, so he forced the little tiny people on this planet to build monuments to him and stuff. You didn't see that one?
No, I didn't see that asinine. What was that?
Asinine? It was Rod Serling. Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's Rod Sterling.
Rod Serling, not Sterling.
Yeah.
But what's your problem with it?
Just if they lived in your house is all.
Man, they ain't gonna live in your house. Why they live in your house? They live on another planet, man.
Yeah, but you're...
Hey, Bud, you know something, man? You worry about more stuff that's weird. Whatever your problem is in life, you know, and we, God knows we all have them, but for you to worry about crap that you don't even need to worry about, little men living in your house, give it up, will you?
Well, Phil, you're about to read this story. Now, do you have Dr. Tarter on the phone?
I've got that. Yes, I... What about it?
Where did you get a load of what he's got to say?
Dr. Ron Tarter's going to join us here. There's a story here about, as you know, we do an awful lot of science on this program. We have Dr. Ron Tarter from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. He's going to be talking with us this hour about a story that I find fascinating, and we do, from time to time, do these kinds of news stories. This is about an ancient primate whose fossil has been discovered, and for the longest time, they have looked for the missing link. What is that primate? What is that hominid down the long line of hominids that the human being has descended from? Which one was the one that connects us to the dumb ape, and which is the bridge, if you will, between the dumb ape and the higher intellect primate hominid? So,
And what do you mean by hominid?
And let's not try to make a joke. That's not like a homo or anything.
Yeah.
No, it's not like a homosexual?
Yeah.
No, it isn't, Bud. Why do I believe you already know that?
I swear to God.
No, he doesn't. He asked me about it.
Boy, you know what? Then I don't feel bad about saying this. You really are dumb, man. I mean...
Well...
Whew! Man. All right, Dr. Ron Tarter.
Phil, I will second that, Bud. As much as I appreciate you, you are dumb. You are dumb, and it seems like you get dumber every time... I come on your program.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that, Dr. Tarter. I mean, coming from you, because I got, a lot to,
Let me ask you, hold on for a minute, but are you moving around in the room there?
Why?
Because this is how you sound. You're going, I appreciate it. Even my son knows how to hold a phone.
Yeah, he is, Dr. Tarter, waving his head around and looking at his feet. What are you looking for?
There's some kind of...
Maybe he's looking for one of those little men.
Yeah, maybe you're looking for a little man. You're doing a little man there? No, I'm not looking for a little man.
Well, then please pay attention to what I'm saying to you. I'm saying to you, Bud, that you are dumb, but there is hope.
It's okay?
Whatever.
Oh, okay, whatever. Well...
All right, look, Dr. Tarter, let's get to this story. An ancient primate has been discovered, and this animal apparently is, or at least they like to think it is, the missing link. I thought I was losing my glasses. I've got them. The Achilles heel was his weak spot in the Greek myth, but the heel of a newly discovered primate provides a strong connection between humans and their possible ancestors. This is an article in CNN on the CNN website for science. And you're familiar with this guy, Dr. Tarter, are you not?
Well, I am, Phil, and It also is an animal that I am very, very grateful we have finally been able to identify, because I do believe it is the missing link. And I also believe it's the missing link in ways that we've only begun to imagine. This is probably the oldest primate skeleton that we have ever found. It's from a creature that resembles very closely the human evolutionary line, which is the anthropoids, and a different primate lineage called the tarsiers, T-A-R-S-I-E-R-S. Scientists have named this the Archosebus Achilles, making reference to the heel bone. And I want to be very clear, the heel bone, which resembles those of the bonnet bucky, okay?
You said a bonnet bucky?
No, I said monkey, you ass. Got...
Okay, take it easy, Dr. Tarner.
No, but if I've got to deal with this guy, you know...
He said bunky.
You know he has a sinus condition.
Exactly.
Monkey.
Harry.
Yeah, is he going to be there taking the pot shots throughout this?
If yes, he is, but not taking pot shots, no. I want you to ask intelligent questions, bud.
I'm awfully sorry, Dr. Tarner, but I did hear you say... You did say the modern bunky.
I didn't say modern bunky. I said modern bunk. God, I hope you die.
Wow, what a thing to say.
That was terrible.
Well, you know what? He leaves me no choice.
Well, I will die someday.
Not soon enough for my taste.
All right, so let's move on now. It's called the, what is it, the Airbus?
Not Airbus. Archibus Achilles. And
all right, I'm sorry. The Archibus Achilles, and it has an Achilles heel, which resembles those of modern monkeys.
That is correct. Now, anthropoids include humans, they include apes, and they include monkeys. Tarsiers are nocturnal primates that live only in southeastern Asia today. The study was published in the...
Are you reading that?
No. This is strictly from memory. Now, for the first time, it shines a light, Phil, on the important phase of the primate and human evolution. But what is the most important part of this study, and the most important part of this discovery, is something that I have been championing now for the last 26 years. The idea that we made a decision, the missing link made a decision, do we stay in the trees, or do we descend to the ultimate confusion, and yes, disorientation and carnage and death below. And I believe that the bonnet bucky, or at least the ancient bucky, that descended from that tree made a big mistake. I also believe, Phil...
You believe it's this anthropoid, as they say?
Yes, I do. And the reason why I do is because we've been able to articulate a picture of this animal. And if you see this Archibus Achilles, or the Archibus Achilles, you will see that it very clearly has very big, expressive, intelligent eyes and has a smile on its face. Now, that tells me that that animal was intelligent enough to know that he should have stayed in the tree and minded his own business. I get very emotional about these things, Phil.
I'll just allow you that, and we are going to take a break. But you're saying some things here that are bordering on almost fantastic, okay?
No, I'm not. No, what? No, I am not.
No, he isn't, Phil.
Well, I mean, it has a smile on its face.
I'm saying that the structure of the jaw, oh my God. I'm not saying that it's smiling because it's happy, but I am saying it's smiling because it's intelligent. And I'm saying it's smiling because it knows it has a decision. It can go both ways.
What do you mean?
If he makes a bisexual...
All right, hold on. We're going to take a break here on the Phil Henry Show. Bud, you know when you're asking these loaded questions.
Well, he's talking about what he mean by both ways.
He's not talking about bisexuality.
All right.
He's talking about whether the early... this early animal, this primate, that is the link between the lower apes and the higher intelligent hominids that came later, of which we are the most advanced, that this missing link made a decision. It could have stayed in the trees and just stayed a monkey squirreling around up there in the trees like a dumbass ape, or it could have come down to the ground and duked it out and done battle with other species, which is ultimately what it did.
Well, why is that bad?
I think Dr. Tarner is going to say it's bad because, you know, it's almost like the biblical story of the tree of knowledge. You know,
so the tree of knowledge, what that ape came down out of.
Not really, but he's saying there was a decision that every species makes that can either guarantee its longevity, can guarantee its extinction, can guarantee some change in the evolutionary path that it takes, and this was a decision made by our ancestor many, many billions and millions and millions and millions of years ago to become human by coming out of that tree and going down into the Serengeti or wherever it was.
Now, what is the Serengeti?
That's a plain in Africa, okay?
All right.
Anyway, we'll be back with Dr. Ron Tarner and get to more of this marvelously and tantalizingly wonderful stuff. I don't know. It's goofy. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. And welcome back. You're the world famous Phil Hendry Show. I don't know. This is somebody I know. You know, if you got a pet, God, I can't stand people that treat animals like they're some sort of a disposable comfort, like the TV's broken. Well, throw it out, get a new one. Pets are not like that. And anyway, it's nobody's business. But you know, I don't want to bum people out with it or anything.
What? Somebody do something with an animal?
No. It's nothing like that. It's they adopted an animal out that they should have kept. You know, I would have taken. It's a cat, and I would have taken the cat off of their hands. The thing about cats is, cats flip, man, when they leave their houses. You know, they like their houses, and they like their humans. And if you put them in a different house, then they go through a whole flip-out. They wig out, man. It really, it weirds them out. Cats are more territorial than dogs. Dogs are like pack animals, and cats are like territorial hunters. So they have, like, their territory, and they have their you know, one or two other, you know, hunters that they... I don't know.
What do you mean, hunter? You're not talking about, like, hunting?
Yeah, I'm talking about hunting, yes.
Well, a cat, Phil. A human, a domesticated cat.
They still have the same instincts, is all I'm saying. Let me, before I begin to lose it, Dr. Ron Tarner back on the line here with us from Mountain Meadow Observatory. All right, so we're talking about this primate, Dr. Tarner. A primate that was discovered, fossils of this primate were discovered, and this is an early animal that is believed to be, or could possibly be, the missing link between the lower primates and the higher hominids that human beings are a part of. One doctor, Christopher Beard, a paleontologist at Carnegie Museum of Natural History. What is a paleontologist, by the way? I'm sorry, Dr. Tarner, what's a paleontologist?
A paleontologist, Phil, is quite simply one who studies ancient life form or prehistoric life form, one who is expert in the extinct life forms that existed prior to recorded history. So those would be, of course, prior to the Ice Age, when they can certainly include human life, when humans were basically a hunter-gatherer society, but they also more exactly include life prior to the emergence of the Homo sapien, and they include not only the older mammals, but as well dinosaur life and so forth. So we're talking that paleontologists can go back 500 million years or longer in the study of these animals.
All right, now we're looking at an animal here, as I mentioned, that is... an ancestor to the human being, and they're talking about how old?
Well, this animal would be 55 million, I believe they're saying 55 million years old. So it is the oldest, and it's the oldest skeleton of a primate, and it's by far the most complete example of a primate of this period.
Now, when did the dinosaurs go extinct?
The dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago.
So the primate and a dinosaur would have lived at the same time.
No, they would not have lived at the same time.
No, bud.
They would have... No, let me do it. They would not... Is it bud?
Yeah.
The primate that I'm talking about is from 55 million years ago. The dinosaur went extinct 65 million years ago. So the dinosaur...
Oh, okay.
Hold on. So the dinosaur was extinct a good 10 million years before this primate came on the scene.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well,
what? Okay, if you don't get the math, he's saying 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs went extinct, then came 55 million years ago, 10 million years later. See?
Because we're going in reverse, bud.
Oh, okay.
God.
Oh, you know, you have my sympathy. So, anyway...
Just to conclude with Bud, so if 10 million years later came this monkey. I want to get to...
It's not a monkey, Phil. It's not a monkey. It's an anthropoid, and it's an animal that is a higher level than a monkey, and I think you do it a disservice. I know that it's obviously it is extinct now, but I think it's an ancestor of ours, and to say this monkey is dismissive, I think, in any way that you would call someone a monkey.
Well, but he is a monkey.
He's an anthropoid. A monkey would be one of these dumb... If you go to the zoo and you see one of these dumb apes in the primate house, and it's got its legs crossed, and it's chewing on some... It's chewing its own feces, and it's just an idiot. That's a monkey. I don't like to think of these animals as monkeys because, again, these are descendants of the human species.
All right, that's fine. This primate, is that accurate?
Yes, primate, anthropoid.
All right. This primate, you said, had a smile on its face and had very intelligent, expressive eyes and was this is the species, this is the missing link that made the decision to leave the trees and go on to the floor of the forest or of the desert and then contend with animals on that level for food.
Well, absolutely, Phil, because it was at that time that this creature decided it could no longer sustain itself by living in the trees, that it was no longer going to be able to survive. And also, keep in mind, this is an ancestor of the human race. So this ape is looking down on animals that it knows are much less intelligent. It knows that if it had what those animals had, if it had the space, it had access to the food sources, and you can well imagine this monkey working the math out.
Well, when you say working out the math...
No, I'm not saying that... Again, you have to resist, but you really have a... Wow, you know...
Yeah, Phil, the Dr. Turner is not saying that he's up there with a calculator.
No, I'm saying, Phil...
You're colloquially, and you're using kind of slang.
Yeah, I'm just in a slang way. I'm saying this. Although the monkey was a descendant of the human being, the anthropoid that I'm talking about, so this missing link, if you will, is looking at these animals and it's thinking, you know, if you wanted to put a human thought, it's thinking, you got to be kidding me. You know, I could be down there and I could be living like a king instead of living in this toilet where I am, which because really. Where that ape lived was up in a tree where, as I said, the food source was very rare, and life was getting very, very sparse.
Well, then, it's a natural decision for any animal to make to go to a place where there's more food, to go to a place where there is a better opportunity for territory, food, offspring, and so forth, correct?
That is absolutely correct, yes. But when you look at the artist's rendering of this anthropoid, the smile on the face, the big eyes... You not only see an animal that is ready to come out of the trees and go down onto the forest floor and begin to compete for those food sources, you see an animal that already has formulated a plan on how he's going to do it. And that I find...
Okay, Doc, you're telling me not to attribute to this animal any human characteristics.
Well, you wanted to believe that it was smiling because it was telling a joke to itself or something.
Well, no, but you're saying that the ape, not ape, I'm sorry.
It's not an ape. It's not an ape.
All right, the primate, or the anthropoid, is smiling because he's formulating a plan, but doesn't that indicate that he's smiling because he thinks he's got...
Well, yes, he believes that he's got the goods on... He believes he's going to put one over on them, yeah.
Well, doesn't that make him have a sense of humor?
He may have a sense of humor, but he's not up there. But Phil wanted people to believe that he was up there going, boy, I'm really going to go down there and kick ass. Not thinking that.
I didn't say any of that. I didn't say any of that. I said that when you said that the animal was smiling, I said, did he have a sense of humor? And you go, no, blah, blah, blah. You know.
No, I didn't go, no, blah, blah. I said, you know, the monkey is up there, and he's looking at all the stuff he can do, but he's not going, boy, wait till I get down there and kick ass. He's not saying that.
All right, we'll be right back here with Dr. Ron Tarner. I'm not saying it either, Doc. I guess we're having a hard time being heard or being understood. Dr. Ron Tarner on the line with us here as we talk about the discovery of a primate that could very well be the missing link that science has so long looked for between the lower monkeys and the higher apes. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Great story. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Welcome back here. We're out of here at 10 o'clock on the Pacific Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. We have Dr. Ron Tarner on the line with us, and we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Tarner on the missing link, and then we have a couple of stories on vinyl. I was just talking to Matt.
Well, you had a lot of those records, too.
I did, and I don't have many more. Dr. Tarner, so where we left off here, this is a fossil.
And you know something, Phil, I just wanted to say, I'm not too comfortable when I'm on your program and I'm bringing up something of scientific import that I think is very important, and I get the sense that someone's laughing at me over there.
No, we're not, Dr. Tarner, but you have to understand, sir.
No, you have to understand, my friend, that this is science and this is serious, and I don't find anything funny about it. Because I said the monkey had a smile, I didn't say monkey, I said an anthropoid or primate had a smile on his face, I didn't mean to say that he was looking at the animals and thinking his you know what, as we like, as I always find myself saying on your program, is you know what, didn't smell.
His you know what didn't smell. You mean didn't?
Yes.
All right,
what's with the pause? Okay, are you trying to say that I'm some kind of a freak?
No, what I'm trying to say is this. This is all I'm trying to say. The smile on this monkey's face, first, it's not a monkey, I'm sorry.
It is not a monkey.
All right. The smile on this anthropoid's face was put there by an artist. Why?
Because he felt that the level of intelligence that that animal had would bespeak a smile as if to say, when I get out of here, you watch what happens.
And you don't think that that is an intelligent mind that almost borders human?
Oh, please. Please. Are you kidding me?
Well, Dr. Tarner, it does sound...
No. I have put up with about as much as I'm going to put up with from you people. I said, Phil...
I don't like the you people thing, Dr. Tarner, and I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm just interpreting it back to you. If there's something I'm getting wrong, that's fine. I don't believe that you have to impugn our intelligence.
What I'm saying to you, if you listen, is the animal, this primate animal, which is the missing link, which has the Achilles bone heel that many, many of the higher apes have, this animal has a smile on its face with very wide, intelligent eyes because he is looking down at the idiot, just idiots. That's what he's looking at. And he's thinking, this is going to be beautiful. You know,
and that doesn't sound like a human.
A human? Humans think that way, sure. But we don't live in trees and we don't have tails. Woo! This guy.
Okay. You know.
Well, you know, Phil, when you're in over your head.
That's right. I'm in over my head. That's it.
No, I'm saying, what am I saying? If there's somebody who wants to, you know.
All right, we got a phone call here. Austin is on the line. Austin calling from Lancaster, California. Austin, you're on with Dr. Ron Tarner. He has a question about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, Dr. Tarner, I enjoy your program.
It's not my program. It's Phil Hendry's.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm enjoying listening to you, but when you're talking about the this primate, as you call it, the anthropoid, and it's smiling... Could it not be just smiling because it feels good?
Because it feels good to smile? No, I don't think so, because I don't think... this was the missing link, Austin.
Yes, sir.
And that means that this animal was on his way to some bigger and brighter things. He was not hanging around the tree smiling like a mental deficient. He was on his way to... He was getting out of that tree come hell or high water...
So, so in other words, the smile represents achievement.
The smile represents the belief that he is finally going to pull himself up out of the gutter and make something of himself.
Okay, thank you very much, Austin.
Well, wait a minute, Phil. I'm not done.
Phil, can I...
No, we're going to take a break. Not take a break, but we're going to get rid of you.
Oh, you're going to get rid of me, huh?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. You tell me that I'm acting idiotic, that the thing is going to pull itself up out of the gutter.
Phil, I hope someday you're never a scientist and you never have to go on a talk show and you never have to talk to you. Because I'm telling you, it not only is it sad, but it burns when I urinate. Good evening to you.
Boy, that was about as...
What'd he say?
He said, not only is it sad talking to me, but it burns when he urinates.
Well, I don't think you treated him with much respect at all.
What did I do?
What didn't you do? He's trying to explain...
Margaret, I listened to everything the man said.
He was trying to explain to you the difference between a human mind and an early primate mind.
That's fine. But he keeps talking about the thing smiling, and when I get out of this tree, things are going to be different. And these are things that a human would say, wouldn't you say?
I'd say that too, yeah. What monkey gonna say? I've never heard a monkey say that.
Oh, you've never heard a monkey say that? Well, gee.
Well, if you were saying that, no monkey would have think it.
No, he was saying, listen to me. I'm sorry, Phil.
All right, that's it. I'm not gonna listen to you belch and then lecture me. All right, you get to do one or the other, not both.
All right, well, then I'll take the belch.
Great, thank you, and you did.
Yeah, man.
Don't wave your hand. I had Hebrew National hot dogs.
And?
And diced onions. Big deal.
All right.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to the toilet.
All right, so, I don't know what to tell you. I'll tell you, this is my understanding of it. I wish I had another doctor here that we could talk, another scientist here. This is my understanding. That we were doing fine about the whole thing. We were doing fine when we got to the whole thing about, you know, it came down out of the trees and began to compete for food, and that's what happens, you know, that's what happens. It lost its tail, didn't need the tail anymore because we're not swinging from trees anymore, and began to walk upright because we could collect things with our arms, all of those things that, you know, but no, we weren't sitting in the tree with a smile on our face thinking, man, this is going to be something, yeah.
Joey's not saying that.
Well, that's exactly what Dr. Tarner's got me believing, or he wants us to believe, like the monkeys up there in the tree going, when I get out of here, you know.
Dalton.
What?
He's on the phone, and I told him you were... Yeah.
Yes, Dr. Tarner.
Will you talk to... This is Randy McKinney, and Randy is a student of mine. Randy, would you please explain...
This is very high and Randy McKinney. I wanted to, I'm a student of Dr. Tarner's, and I'm taking paleontology. And I also take a theater class. And I decided that I would create the mindset of this anthropoid. What is he thinking in the tree? And I think that'd help you.
All right.
I think the anthropoid is thinking that, man, look at all that. Yeah. What am I going to do with it? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out there. And I will do what I've always wanted to do. I'm going to lord it over all them apes. Look at all them. And he probably not use the N-word or anything. So look at all them N-word, you know. And I'm going to lord it over them.
Now, what is this, a one-man show?
What's that?
What is this, a one-man show?
Yes, sir. It's called The Mind of the Anthropoid.
Yeah, it's called The Mind of the Missing Link.
Mind of the Missing Link, Mind of the Anthropoid.
And it's a wonderful one-man show here at the University of Denver, Phil, if you ever want to come and see it.
The Mind of the Anthropoid, and he's in the tree, and,
It's theater, Phil. Don't start it. Can you get off your high horse for 5 seconds and quit acting like everything is a freak show and you're the only guy sane in the room? Okay?
No, listen here. What I'm saying is, the anthropoids in the tree, I say, man, I tell you, I get out of here, and there are going to be some changes. I get out of this tree, and I hit the floor of that desert, there are going to be changes around here. I'm going to kick his ass, kick his ass, kick his ass, kick his ass, just keep, you know, pointing. I'm going to get food. I'm going to kick ass, and I'm going to rule the roost. Now, I think that's what he thought, and I think that's what probably Dr. Tarner trying to say, and you've taken it, and you anthropomorphized that, you know?
no. Well, of course I'm anthropomorphizing it, because that's exactly what you're saying. You're giving this monkey a human form of communication.
No, he's not, Phil. He's just saying what the monkey would think. And I don't like using the word monkey, as you know. It's not monkey. I know it's not monkey. Oh, you're going to start that? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought... I'm just trying to give you an idea as to what the thought process would be.
Well, you all you're doing is confusing it. I don't get it. I thank you, gentlemen, for trying. Thank you and good night.
So you're going to make me look like an...
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Ron Tarner. Coming back, we're going to get into a little bit of a discussion because my understanding from Matt is that vinyl albums that still have the promotional sticker on them are worth hundreds of dollars. And I used to have those by the tens by the tens, maybe even by the hundreds.
You had these promotional albums.
Yeah. What used to happen, as a matter of fact, you come to the radio station, and our music director would put albums in our mailboxes. We had mailboxes, and in the mailboxes were promos. In the mailboxes would be production we had to do. In the mailbox would be a new album that was out. And our music director would give each of us a copy of the new album. Let's say it was a new, I don't know. It wasn't, a lot of times it wouldn't be a well-known group, because the well-known group is going to get added, and she didn't really need, I'm thinking of Pam May when we were at K-West, she didn't need our input on how good a Rod Stewart album was, although I hated Rod Stewart, and I didn't know anybody that liked him. He was really selling a lot of records.
You hated Rod Stewart. Now I've heard it all. Now I know why you never made it as a DJ.
Why I never made it as a DJ. Anybody could make it as a DJ. Anybody. And I made it as a DJ. I got out of being a DJ. But the point I'm trying to make is she gave us albums that were lesser known, so we would listen to those. And they always had the sticker on the front that said, for promotional use only, not for resale. And naturally, I would see these being resold at some of these used record stores I'd go to. But anyway, according to Matt, that album, if you've got an album with that promotional sticker on, it's worth $500.
What?
It's worth $500. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll talk about it here, man. And I got a couple of other things I need to alert you y'all to. 855-500-7445. 855-500-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So when I was younger in the radio business, if I'd have known how much these albums are worth, Jack, I would have held on to every last one of them, because it got to the point where you had lots and lots of vinyl and you didn't know what to do with it.
You had a girlfriend collect it.
My girlfriend, yes, she collected this stuff like it was going out, which it was going out of style. And she had crates and crates and crates of vinyl. I knew people that collected a lot of it, and I'm guessing that maybe today they've made a lot of money on that stuff. But the thing about it was this. If you had, and I didn't know this, but if you had one of those albums that said this is for promotional purposes only, it apparently is worth a lot of money now. Now, people collect vinyl. I personally would not collect vinyl, and I even though I know now that it's worth a lot of money, I still would not have gone into collecting it, you know?
Well, $500 an album, Phil, you said you had a lot of those.
It doesn't make any difference. I mean, back then, if somebody would have said to me, Phil, you can make $500 an album if you will hold on to these, I would probably think, well, wait a minute, I hope to make a lot more money doing something else besides collecting, because collecting vinyl albums, in order that they don't become warped, because they would get all bent out of shape from the heat. They sound like hell if they get a scratch in them. They were just a very, very... it was a very delicate and very temperamental, you know, medium. And I just didn't want to have anything really much more to do with it other than to play it. It sounded fantastic, you know. But you know what? Tape, as soon as tape came along, I didn't so much like 8-track, but when the cassette tapes came along, I became a huge fan. When discs came along, I became a huge fan. Anything that would clean the sound up, for me, was great.
What about that dad at bottom?
What guy that bought them?
You said a guy come along and want them?
Oh, well, here's what happened. There was these guys that lived next door to me, and I think I've told this story a billion times. These guys, these cats were bikers, and they lived next door to me. And I forget what we were doing. I was talking to them one day, and they saw all this vinyl that I had.
And they stole it.
No, they didn't steal it. No, they didn't steal it. Why would you say that?
On account of your bikers.
Well, you get off that, Margaret, okay? No, they didn't steal it. They came, they saw this, and the guy said to me, what would you take in trade for that vinyl? Because I didn't want this stuff.
Well, what were some of the records you had?
Well, there was nothing there that I couldn't replace. There was nothing there that I couldn't go to the station and say, can I get another copy of this? It was a lot of stuff that was some stuff it's really well known and some stuff that today you wouldn't know it, man. You know, I mean, I'm trying to think of, we had like weird groups, man. Richard T. Bear, who the hell is he, you know?
Who?
Richard T., exactly. UK Squeeze. Bands that I just... So these cats said, we have, you know, we drive trucks for a living. This my buddy drives a truck for a living, and we've got filet mignon. I said, no kidding? He goes, yeah. We'll trade you, like, we can get you, like, 30 filet mignon steaks or something for rec. I said, you're on, man. That sounded really good to me, because I just was not.
So you were not a, you did not like music, did you?
I like music, Margaret. I didn't like all these records that I wasn't going to play. A lot of them I didn't like, no. So these guys came with this side of filet mignon, like it was 30 steaks. It was frozen. And I threw that in my freezer, and they took a bunch of these records off of me, probably three quarters of them, and that was fantastic.
You still want what was the filet mignon like?
It was great. You would cut, it was just sliced off filet mignon steaks all summer long, barbecuing these things. And
so that's a pretty fair deal?
That was for me, yeah. And to this day, I have never been a freak for that stuff. I know guys that are into, wow, you know, you're in radio? Yeah, let me show you something. And they'll take you to their collection of radios. And I've never, ever cared. I've never cared. Whatever I can listen to it on is fine with me, man. It doesn't have to be...
So you're not really in love with the idea of the radio as hardware... You are more in love with,
Is this going to take a while?
Hold on for a minute. Yes, it'll take a while. You're more in love with the idea of the...
You get out of here.
All right, well, I tried.
You tried. No, I don't like any of that. So, I like to listen to music, and I like to be on the radio, but I don't care about old radios, and I don't care about turntables, stuff like that. But so anything that makes it... I'm a big iPod. I love that, man. I mean, I got, you know, I'm downloading music like a madman. That's my thing. You know, can you imagine? I saw a Laurel and Hardy once where they were driving down the road, and they had a turntable where the radio should be. And, you know, you're watching that, and you're 5 years old, and you think, well, that's a pretty good idea. Well, you know, of course, no, it isn't, but... I think that people thought that vinyl and the idea of a disc playing was going to last forever, man. If you think about it, it lasted... How long did it last?
Well, vinyl, or the round disc, you mean?
Yeah.
That started around, let's say, the turn of the century. So it was a good 80-plus years.
80 years. 80 years, the disc, the audio disc, and let me just be very clear. 80 years, the grooved audio disc...
Yeah, it's a groove.
No, not it was a groove, man. It was a grooved audio disc, okay?
Not gonna have grooves in it, man.
What?
Don't worry about it. 80 years. In the time since the compact disc was introduced for commercial use, and by that I mean at the radio station, we didn't have that until the mid-80s. Okay? So you're talking 85 years, and now it's been 30 years since the compact disc was introduced, and we have had one, two, three, four different kinds of medium pop up besides the disc. We've had DAT tape, and now, of course, we have digital. So, you know, I don't want to blow anybody's mind, and I realize I'm probably, you know, getting into an area of discussion that's too weird, but that is the progression of technology. It speeds up. It speeds up. The printing press... Took a long time before we then got into like computers and laser printing, and then that just boom, boom, boom. And the same thing with audio. It was like these groove discs for the longest time, and then they got 45s, but it was still basically the same thing. They changed from hard plastic to vinyl, but really, it was the same medium. And then all of a sudden comes discs, comes DAT tape, and then it's fully digital. You know?
Well, what's next? You're going to have, like, the hologram and everything.
Well, it's not going to be a hologram. Why would they need a hologram? I mean, it probably isn't going to go anywhere from here.
I don't know. I have no idea. Unless the... If it's digital, the player itself, the source itself, becomes like maybe something you plug into your head, you know?
Oh, will you get out of here with that, Phil?
I don't know, man. That's what I'm thinking. You know, I'm always thinking that way. I'm always thinking that, you know, the technology is going to advance to the level of... it's going to advance to the level of it becoming a part of our genetics, you know. You'll be born with DNA for this, that, and also you'll have a biological iPod.
So we'll be robots. I get it already. I've got a little more hope for the human race than to think we're going to be walking around with an iPod shoved up our...
Go. Anyway, thank you very much, Margaret, for that closing thought. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll see you guys tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on the West Coast, 10 p.m. on the East Coast. And PhilHenryShow.com all the time.
Phew. That's what that monkey say, man.
You're not supposed to say monkey.